Now, an hour of clarity for exhausted people of our nation mired in toxic partisanship. Left versus right. Us versus them. While we pay to keep our politicians fighting, how do we, the people, rise up and solve the great challenges of our time? We do it by embracing freedom and liberty. There may be no such thing as a free lunch, but this hour is as close as it gets. Welcome to A Free Solution.
Welcome to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, your host today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. And, man, it was a beautiful day in my neck of the woods today. I'm a little bit gassed out from doing a ton of hard work. I'm assembling, putting the final electrical details together on a big, huge solar project. And, man, it was a stressful day, but it was a great day. It was an absolutely great day.
Yeah, man, that sounds tough. See, I'm on parental leave, so I was outside just like holding the baby for a while.
Genius. Fresh air. Those kids need fresh air. It's a good call.
Fresh air, yeah. No, got outside. It's 70 degrees out. How could I not just hang out outside? I got all my backyard furniture set up.
Nice.
I don't care. I'm gonna risk. It's probably gonna snow 4 feet next week. But I'm gonna set it all up because, why do I have this if I'm not enjoying it on a day like this?
Yeah, and look, WYSL audience, if you didn't miss that, Kevin Wilson is a dad again for the second time. He's doing his part.
Two.
Yeah, he's doing his part to fight the declining population growth in the United States. And guys, I'm at the tail end of that. I don't think I got any more kids on the way. I just want to thank Kevin and his wife and congratulate them for it's a sacrifice, Kevin. It's a big deal. It takes up a lot of your time.
It does. As it turns out, kids are time consuming. Yeah,
they are. But man, it was always worth it. I love my kids. I miss my kids. They're all kind of growing up on me. So, dude, enjoy it. Enjoy those moments. Even the stressful ones, man. Enjoy it. I'm happy for you.
It's funny. And John Thuman on YouTube asks a cameo of the newest Mr. Wilson. No, he's eating right now, but and not particularly cooperative. He's a big advocate when he wants stuff. He's noisy, hungry little kid, which is great. Love to hear it, but he's a noisy kid. It's good, and yeah, I don't know, but he's
it's beautiful, man. Like
good baby,
Thomas Daniel
strong,
Cleaver
healthy,
says out there in Facebook land, children are the future of the GDP.
Yeah. Children add to the future GDP. There we go. I guess that's one way to think of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, all right. So, besides my being a dad again, which is awesome, and super excited to have happen. We are gonna talk about some politics and policy stuff. Tim, let's kick it off with something that kind of happened last week when I was in the fog of new parenthood. The governor of New York deciding to put National Guard folks on the New York City subway system. I want to talk about that a little bit. So, Tim, you want to lay that out a little bit?
Well, I as usual, Kevin, I was getting my news from Twitter, and Paul Krugman, early last week, the Nobel Prize winning economist, and bear with me, you're going to want to see how this ties in, was going on about how people have been putting down New York City, and it's such a wonderful place to visit. And the very next day or the day after, they're announcing that they have 750 to 1,000 New York State Guards people checking bags and making sure that the subway is safe, which to me, Kevin, kind of implies that perhaps maybe it's not. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it seems like there's some concern for safety on the New York City subway system. And it's interesting that because this has been a thing for a while, right? It's been a growing concern for residents in New York City, as it is with many other areas. There's been an increase in crime over the last few years relative to prior to COVID, right? Like after COVID, crime spiked a bit, including violent crime, and in places like the New York City subway system. And that kind of coincided with the whole Black Lives Matter movement and the kind of hesitancy to use the police to solve like quality of life issues like violence in a mass transit system.
Right, right. And here we are. Like, people are drawing this juxtaposition, Kevin. And what I want to talk about, they're saying, look, we're defunding the police, and now we have to call in the National Guard. And they're kind of like poning everyone with that. They're kind of like, that's such a known. And it's like, that was a big lie anyway, right? Like, they didn't defund them.
The crazy part is like, we probably could have found a middle ground there. Right, like,
I thought so.
You know, like, we could have found a middle ground between police doing like nothing and bringing in the National Guard to search literally everyone's bags as they enter like their daily commute. Like, I get the feeling there's somewhere in between those two things. And like, I saw the pictures of like the New York City police officers like just sitting on their phone playing games or whatever. I mean, whatever they were doing, and like, as like crime is happening around them, And then, like, this is the next escalation. Instead of like, hey, we're going to get more serious about fare jumpers and violence, and we're going to ask that police intervene when they see a violent incident happen, which they don't always do. Sometimes they just they don't do anything. They don't have to. There's that famous case, because we've talked about it on the show before, that case of like the violent like knife attack that happened on the New York City subway, and then the victim of that attack ended up trying to sue the police department, and the Supreme Court basically said, no, police have no obligation to intervene in these situations.
Which was bone chilling for a lot of people. Yeah. And yet people still don't seem to realize that's they took to protect and serve off the cars for a reason. And that's because they have no real obligation to put themselves in harm's way to protect you from a violent crime. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, but what I'm saying is people's impression is slightly different than the reality. Let's put it that way. That's probably the nicest way to put it.
Yeah, that is probably true. So what we got here then, going back to the actual situation at hand, is Governor Hochul said, well, we're going to have these National Guard folks just to get things under control, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be searching bags, part of her 5-point system. And one of the other interesting things, like, so two things about this. One is basically like, well, what if people, refuse a search? And she's basically, well, then they're not going to ride the subway. They're not going to be able to do the daily commute. Fourth Amendment, who's heard of it, right? And the other thing is that, And I don't know if this is going to be enforceable or not. Is she said that if you have a violent felony, that they're going to try to ban you from that system. And I don't know if I like it, and I don't know if it's enforceable anyway. Tim, any thoughts on those two things?
Well, so in a way, it's an issue of public property. It's a property that's in the government's hands, at least on like 90% level. So. Can they ban a former violent felon? Can they ban somebody for an egregious assault? Can they trespass people off of that? I think that that's a legal issue that people could win. Like a properly aggressive lawyer could say, well, you can't ban this guy and now you owe him, a lifetime of free transportation plus $100,000. Like, I do think you're right. I think it's a case that they would lose, and I think it's a case that will cost them a lot of money.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is like, I don't know how they would enforce it. Right. So like one of two things can happen in like that situation. Like, let's say like that's a policy that they actually pursue. Right. Say, OK, if you've committed a violent felony in the past, you are no longer allowed to ride the New York Metro system. So in addition to like some of the legal issues there, how are they going to enforce it? Either they don't enforce it and they just say like, oh, yeah, well, like, we'll check it and we'll ticket people who are riding and they're not allowed to. Or they have to enforce it by checking the ID of every single person who's like getting on the system.
Well, Kevin, isn't it? It's simpler than that. They could just make a law that everybody gets implanted with a chip that matches their basically their lifetime. Has their crime history on it, their health history on it, and the National Guard guys can just read it with an iPhone type thing, and then they'll know who that guy is.
Right? So yeah, they'll just have, you know, National Guard troops in there, you know, out with their long guns, and they'll just check everyone's microchips every morning just to know if you are allowed. You know, like China, they're the ones innovating in this space, right? Like they're the ones who are saying they have their social credit system and like they check you every day. You're riding the subway outside the area you're supposed to be riding it. Well, they're going to shut it down. You're not allowed to be there. So we just got to emulate China a little bit more. That's
right. And the government can get involved if you're late for work. Like if you check in 5 minutes late at your subway station and you don't catch the next train, they can kind of send you an email to remind you to get up earlier the next day. Maybe they even make a phone call on your behalf. You know what I mean? To kind of nudge you in the proper tax earning direction. You know what I mean? You got to get out there and produce for the government. So, I mean, it's a pretty simple solution, I guess.
Yeah. But she wants to, the law specifically is she's state law blocks judges that blocks people from riding subway or buses for 3 years if they're convicted of attacking a passenger.
Yeah.
Is
good,
the specific
good for
thing.
Her.
Yeah. Which again, it's interesting. It's just, the enforcement's either impossible or draconian, right? Like there's no, I don't think there's a good clean way to enforce it that doesn't turn into a total dystopian situation.
I mean, Kevin, honestly, sure, I'm making jokes, but I'm making jokes because I'm wildly uncomfortable with this notion. I'm wildly uncomfortable with people being searched, and we're right back to stop and frisk, but it's not in a high crime neighborhood at the request of the people in the neighborhood. It's in the subways. We have a situation where, and again, I'll point at the government's response to COVID, that there is an uptick in violence. There is people's lives were destroyed, disrupted, you know, disjointed. There is an underscore that the economy, and we'll talk more about it when we get to the State of the Union address, but that the economy is doing really well. And all over the world, we're seeing these upticks in violence, including New York City subways. So I'm not buying the metrics, because violence is a reaction to increasing poverty, to drug addiction, all sorts of things that are not being handled correctly by the government. And I'm not sure that the government, honestly, I'm sure that the government can't handle them correctly anyway. That's always been one of our talking points. And here we are, more proof. I do want to circle back around to something, though, Kevin, and it's more good news. The National Guard is banned from carrying long guns in New York City.
There's that, I guess. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. They can search it, but they can't really carry guns. So, you know, it's okay.
Oh,
it's
so good. We're safe then. So, well, let me get to a couple of these comments though. So Sam on YouTube says, yay for our literal police state. So happy they have once again proven libertarians right. And he says, just use the National Guard, automated turrets, and facial recognition, just like every dystopian story ever.
Yeah.
There's that, man. It's just thinking ahead that this is where it's going to go. And actually, Kay, I'm gonna shift gears a little bit because we have a few minutes left, enough time to talk about it. I think it's kind of related. It's related to the disorder that people feel in certain cities and the weird kind of pendulum swing that we're getting on this stuff. So I wanted to talk about the recriminalization of drugs in Oregon.
Oh yeah. Let's get to that. That's a good one.
Yeah. Cause I think this impulse, cause again, this is a Democratic governor and a Democratic city doing this thing in New York. And it's the same thing. It's the far lefties who've freaked out at the consequences of what they've done and don't have the fortitude to find new and innovative ways of dealing with disorder in the systems that they created, because they both didn't think through the consequences and then don't have the fortitude to stand by their convictions in terms of things like drug decriminalization and criminal justice reform. To me, I'm coming at this from a libertarian. I think this is bad, right? I know there's some WYSL audience folks out there who are good, they're recriminalizing drugs. They should never decriminalize them in the first place. That was a lefty farce. But to me, I'm we shouldn't be throwing people in jail for being addicted to a substance. And that's exactly what they're proposing again in Oregon, because what's happening on the streets of cities like Portland is there's a lot of folks who are just strung out. They're out. The cities aren't willing to do anything about homeless encampments and people on the street and folks are dying on streets of fentanyl. Like it's a real legitimate problem. I don't want to like, there's some folks who want to like brush down their rug. It's a real problem. Right.
Sure. It's like, look, that kind of misery is a real problem. We want, if we're trying to grow life in a future, we want that to be someplace else, or we more importantly want that to not be happening. So, but is the answer to criminalize people? Portland did. I read an article and I didn't pull it up tonight, Kevin, but they were kind of talking like, we're going to recriminalize this, but we're going to kind of try to keep it to $100 fines, and we're going to offer the opportunity of expunging your record if you participate in a rehab program, or if you find housing, or if you make yourself less of a menace immediately through some effort right away. We're going to roll back our punitive measures. So at least they're trying, but look, there's other problems here that why are people in the streets doing drugs? Like there's nothing cool about that. Like what's the misery index for that? Why are people doing those things? And again, I go to the reckless response to COVID, a GDP that's growing through inflation. I'm going to like, you know, growth in jobs are government jobs, and that people that are living on the streets are not going to get a government job. I mean, these things are real. Like people that are living on the streets are going to get work from a contractor who has cash in his pocket, and they're criminalizing that, Kevin. So it's like the system is broken. Like that's the reality. And every time they try to fix it, Kevin, they break it worse. So here we are. Maybe Portland won't break it worse, but that's what I suspect is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean that's I agree. It's the situation where like they've created this. They like it because this happens in both in terms of like disorder you're seeing here and in the business climate that you see in many states, especially New York, is like they create conditions where like it's impossible for people to succeed, right? And then they find like some other thing to latch onto. Oh, it's the drugs. No, what's the underlying issue? How are people getting to that point? And then, you know, their only solution is, well, you know, we want this to go away, so we're going to throw people in cages, right? Like that's what you end up turning back to. And I know there's going to be some like maybe softer enforcement than what they had under their previous like drug criminalization regime, but you're still giving police the option to throw people in jail. It's not the right way to deal with this, in my opinion. And like there has to be another way around it. It's again setting the conditions right so that people don't get to that point. It's actually like because they kind of dropped the ball that what was supposed to happen with the decriminalization stuff was they're supposed to like provide all this stuff to have extra funding go to like clinics and you know treatment facilities and all this stuff, and that didn't like go through for a couple years, and even the rollout was sort of botched. It's just like, man, like I wish government could do this stuff competently, because like I get that there's a okay, if we're not going to enforce this in this way, right, if we're not going to enforce it by dragging people off the street and throwing them in a cage, then like we need to give an alternative to that, right? So set up the alternative to that and make it effective instead of just
they were probably expecting BlackRock and its like many guises to come up with a no-bid contract to take care of drug addiction, and BlackRock just wasn't nimble enough at that point. They're too busy, you know, investing in zoning laws in big cities that are up and coming. So, you know, like that, they have their priorities, man. They're too busy getting ready to rebuild Ukraine. You know, like they have their priorities.
Where's it? We're going to go all the way down the conspiracy hole, right? Like, is it BlackRock?
With BlackRock, Halliburton makes BlackRock look like, I mean, BlackRock makes Halliburton look like small potatoes, bro. They're huge. Oh, they create businesses to siphon money from the government with no bid contracts. That's, I don't know if it's a conspiracy, but it's a theory. And I've seen evidence of it. I'll present it on the show one of these nights.
All right, man. Like I'm ready to talk about the housing one. Cause that one, you know, I mean, there's some shady stuff. I'll give you, like, we talked about the detention centers and no bid contracts with that. Yeah, it's not great. But the housing one, I don't think they're the problem. I think that the government is once again the problem, not a corporation. But on that note, we're going to have the break because we're running out of time. Yeah, I'll let you rebuttal in the break, Tim. Yeah. And if you listen at WYSL, go find our podcast so you can hear this type of stuff. We're going to be back here on A Free Solution in just a minute. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today. 585-999-TECH.
Hey, this is Kevin Wilson, host of A Free Solution. You ever need a tool for just one project, but didn't want to spend the cash for something you'd use just once or twice? Well, there's a new tool library in Rochester where you can borrow just the thing you need instead of buying a new one. It's called the Tool Shed from the Southeast Area Coalition, and membership starts at just $25 a year. Use it for home projects or to support your business. Learn more and become a member at seektoolshed.org. That's S-E-A-C, toolshed.org.
In 1926, the Avon Fire Department put an Aaron's Fox pumper into service. It now sits fully restored in a museum near Toronto. Avon has an opportunity to bring the Fox home for its 100th birthday for a fraction of its appraised value. The Aaron's Fox Full Circle Preservation Society needs your help. Look us up on Facebook or call 615-6463. Let's bring home the Fox.
A Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Marion O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. I'm here, man. Like, you guys missed me and Kevin literally coming to, you know, internet blows during the break. But welcome back to the WYSL audience. We love you guys too. Feel free to join us in some of our other endeavors and catch the content that doesn't make it to the radio, because some of the things I say can't even go on the radio, to be honest with you.
It is true sometimes. But, you know, we oftentimes it during breaks and after show, we keep talking about stuff. So if you're like, did you keep that conversation going? A lot of times, yeah. And this time we kept the conversation going about BlackRock and then went into a couple other things as well. But anyway, so Tim, I think we're going to jump to a new topic now. We're going to talk about State of the Union stuff.
All right.
Tim, is the State of the Union strong?
Well, look, I always got to fall back on the fact that no matter what, I'm proud to be an American, that I think Americans are among the best people in the world, that we all, Kevin, all of us, guys, even Joe Biden supporters, even some hardcore lefties, even Bernie Sanders, we all have good intentions that we want a better world for our children, our friends, and our family. So is the State of the Union strong? Yes. Is it great? Is it what Joe Biden said it was? No. And can we do better? Yes. Yes, we absolutely have to. We have to. What do you think about that little State of the Union, Tim's State of the Union?
You know, that's yeah, sure. I mean, I agree with your civic nationalism, but yeah, I don't know. I didn't actually have like all that strong feelings on a lot of stuff in the State of the Union, other than the fact that like there's like a few things that ended up coming out like around that, like, oh, we're gonna decriminalize marijuana.
Okay.
Which great, man. Like who increased the penalties for that? Like, who is the guy who did that? Man, right. we should really punish that guy. Oh, right.
We should, right?
Yeah, it's Joe Biden. Ah, shoot.
Imagine that.
Yeah. No one should be jailed for using or possessing marijuana. Okay, cool. Thanks, Joe. Yeah, like, we should do that. Like, someone with executive authority should, like, deschedule marijuana. Just do that immediately.
Look, it's a medicine. It some of the many compounds that it offers are being wildly overcharged for by Big Pharma, okay, because it's still a Schedule One kind of thing, and it's a real problem. So, yeah, decriminalize it. Take it off Schedule One. Do all of those things, and let's take advantage of the benefits of this. People like getting high. That's none of my business. I like drinking beer, you know? What do you think about that,
Yeah. Kevin? I agree with you. You should be able to do that and not go to jail. I'd almost take it further. But you know, we talked about that last segment, so I won't dive into it.
Yeah, but look, I think you brought up a good point that people want to talk about. How does a guy like Joe Biden escape the consequences of his decisions for 50 years? Okay, like this guy was a racist, was a segregationist, like now he wants to be all of a sudden this kind progressive dude, and there's no accountability for it, and like he was a plagiarist. These are all things that he really did, and here we are. He's the president of the United States, and
sure is.
He's not writing his own tweets. He's lying about GDP. He's lying about the growth in the middle class income. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm kind of ranting tonight. I apologize, everybody.
It's all right. You know, it's a good show for ranting. That's just how it is. But he had that stuff again. It would be great if there's some actual substance behind it and accountability behind it. And you know, we do have to talk about, like, because he acknowledges a handful of problems, right? Like, like the rising home costs, right? But
sure.
One of the issues with it is he talks about, like, well, we're going to do some more tax credits, and we're going to do, $5,000 towards, first time home buyers and things like that.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And again, it just, they correctly identify that, like, they shouldn't be, that we need to do something about housing. But instead of doing what Trump actually tried to do temporarily, he kind of backed down on it. But doing what Trump tried to do through, oh my goodness, who is the guy, the doctor who is the HUD chief for a minute there? Oh, I can't remember his name. Okay. But anyway, yeah, I know. I'm going to remember his name like immediately after his segment's over. But like they tried to basically say, okay, we're going to withhold some federal funds unless you do zoning reform, right? So like for a minute there, that's what they tried to do. And Ben Carson, thank you. I'm like, man, I just blanked on Ben Carson's name. My goodness. Thank you, Steve Becker on Facebook.
I thought Ben Carson was actually like the Surgeon General for a bit. So like he got stored in the wrong office in my brain.
Yeah, you'd think so, but he was HUD.
That's wild.
Yeah, so thank you, Steve, for Dr. Becker, for assisting me in my sleep-deprived brain.
That's our favorite for the vice presidential seat with Donald J. Trump, by the way.
Yeah.
That's according to all the betting lines. He's most likely going to be the VP candidate.
Yeah, but basically what the Biden administration is doing is, okay, yes, we're acknowledging we're gonna try to lower housing costs. And what are they doing? We'll sort of like mention zoning reform, but not actually do any concrete actions to do anything about it. And then again, subsidize demand. That's just it. It's okay. It's the only solution that progressives in the Republican and Democratic Party can think of, because it's the only, like my theory of like toxic politics is somewhat different than you, in that a lot of government action, a lot of politician action, is they will do stuff that they can take credit for, right? Like they want to be the ones coming in and being the heroes. And I kind of talked about this in a local way, during the break, when I talked about like the county executive, like subsidizing the band too, like subsidizing landlords. They want to be the heroes. They want to be the one like, hey, we're giving you all this money. You're welcome. We're fixing the problem. They can't take credit in the same way if it's, we're going to get out of the way and let you guys fix the problem. Like, a lot of politicians don't like that. They're nervous about that. They think, other than, you know, Javier Milei down in Argentina, but a lot of politicians in the U.S., they're like, oh, well, like, what if something goes wrong? What if they do something I don't like? Or what if I can't take credit for it? God forbid you can't take credit for it.
Yeah. No, and what if everybody gets mad and jealous at all the, you know, up and coming middle class landlords, like, and they blame me for that? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So I don't think we're, again, it's one of those issues where we're not that far apart. I certainly think that they want to signal their virtue. They want accolades from their constituents. And so that causes them to participate in what I'm calling corruption. I'm not actually suggesting that they get paid off. I'm thinking more along the lines of they talk to a developer, a big developer, and the developer says, hey, you know what would be really good is if we got rid of these kind of restrictions, like make sure lots are a certain size and make sure, you know, you can't put a third story on a house, because then that enhances the value of my property. You know what I mean? I think it's that kind of thing, and it allows them to take that to the constituents and say, hey, I did you this big favor on behalf of this guy. But they don't say on behalf of this guy, arguably. I guess there's a flaw in that.
Yeah, I mean, like you have this thing, and like my thing is like straight is just they're trying to buy votes, right? Like it's like,
yeah, absolutely.
They're bribing us with their own money. Like that's what it
they
is.
They are. And look, I want to introduce into our conversation and into everybody's lexicon, and it's going to be quite a challenge, but we need to talk about market distortions more often. So when Joe Biden subsidizes first-time homebuyers, it's a market distortion. It increases demand, which raises prices, and it's an artificial increase in demand. Therefore, it's an artificial increase in price. Therefore, it contributes to devaluing our currency. Does that make sense? I know it sounds a little circular, but if we get to the bottom of this and we wonder why we can buy less with our money, it's because the government distorts markets all the time, at least in part. I know that blanket statement like that is rough, but I don't care.
They do that constantly, you know. That's and it's one of those things where like people don't really like see or acknowledge that particular distortion. And you know, we talk about this all the time. Is like that's get back down to the fundamental problem. Like get back down to like what caused these issues in the first place. What caused these issues with higher housing costs? What caused these issues with like you know, violence and on the streets of New York City? Like, don't just look at like, how do we come in as government to save it? But like, what were the underlying issues that created the conditions that allowed for disorder and high prices and distorted markets in different situations where you've created like government regulatory capture and the ability of a couple companies to dominate particular markets or whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got a couple more criticisms of the State of the Union. And look, I don't care like whether you like Trump or don't like Trump. Trump is not literally Hitler. Trump is not literally Putin. Okay. And Joe Biden did a little bit of like inferential kind of like wandering in the very opening of his State of the Union that was kind of like Putin is Trump, Trump is Putin, and I'm here to fight World War 17. And take it to these guys, but we can fight them with democracy right now and our money. Well, your money. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I hate that. It's a shoddy way to communicate. It's inaccurate, and it's an emotional like attack on people that are already overly emotional. You know what I mean? Like, it drives me crazy.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The Ukraine thing. Definitely. I knew you bring that up. And he said like, you know, the Republicans are dangerous. We need to fund this, and we knew that that's where it was coming. I mean, I tweeted this out there that I don't want to go down this rant too much, but it funding Ukraine's like really politically popular. Like it's very popular. So it's interesting that like there's even as much resistance to it as there is. You know, when they've done surveys, like 75% of people are like, yeah, like we should be funding this war. Maybe that poll skewed, but like I've seen a couple of those out there where you know, and I'm not saying they're right. I'm just saying it's popular.
Right. It's popular, but I Well, I think popularity is waning. I think people are recognizing that it's a financial boondoggle. But I also think that people seem to remain completely unaware that the deficit has consequences, that devaluation is real, that inflation, a lot of people recognize that inflation is a problem, and they're not quite buying the narrative that inflation is under control. So that's I see that as a net positive, but I don't think they're actually all the way there. You know, like they're not really as upset as they should be.
Biden's doing something about it. He's talking about shrinkflation, and you know he's going to hold the corporations accountable for it. Like, thank goodness.
And when we let him point his ugly, angry finger at corporations for inflation, and fully 40 to 50% of the population does allow him to do that without any questioning at all of his narrative, that creates the problem, or that furthers the problem. You know, I did, Kevin, go to USA Today, and they got some fact checks on this joker that USA Today is pretty middle of the road. They kind of don't really take hard shots at people. So they did take a shot at Biden for him bragging about how his the deficit is down over $1 trillion, which I enjoyed that. Basically, they referred to the fact that his deficit is down from the COVID lockdown economy, which, and again, not enough can be made of him making stories out of, you know, hey, we lifted the lockdown, things kind of went back to normal, now we're getting some normal production in GDP. Like, I don't know why the world lets him get away with that. But USA Today called him to account.
I'm glad they called him out on it, because that's what it drives me bananas that he keeps doing it, and he keeps saying, like, oh yeah, I'm cutting the deficit. Like, okay, you are just cutting what you arbitrarily decided was like the budget if you looked at 2020 and 2021 and then said, I'm spending less than we could have spent, so therefore I'm cutting money. No, that's not how it works. Not actually reducing the debt in any way. You're still doing trillions of dollars in deficit spending, which is way more than what we're doing like 10 years ago. And you're pretending like you're saving us money. It's a joke to anyone who thinks about it for 2 seconds.
Right. So exactly. They did call out him misquoting Trump, even though he wasn't mentioning Trump by name, and exaggerating basically criticizing him for taking Trump's words out of context, which, like WSL, you know that I don't really like Trump, but I do call out the mainstream media. And USA Today actually did what I consider to be journalism. They actually brought it and said, hey, Trump didn't say that exactly the way Joe Biden framed it. And they're not supporting Trump, believe me. They're not a big Trump fan paper. They're not like the New York Post or something like that. So I thought it was okay. You know, I think there's a market for this kind of discussion in our society. They framed it very politely, but they did call it out.
All right. Well, on that note, though, that journalistic note, we're going to have to take a break. Thanks again for joining us here on Free Solution on WSL. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Introducing a sobering and unavoidable truth. The latest advancements in artificial intelligence have made cyber attacks easier than ever before. Cyber criminals are relentlessly targeting your business right now, seeking the tiniest opening in your defenses to drain your accounts and steal sensitive data. Your finances and your customers' trust are on the line. Call the experts at Simple Tech Innovations now at 585-999-TECH to secure your business today. Don't wait until it's too late. Make the call today, 585-999-TECH.
To live the quality of life we deserve in truth and freedom, informed by our Constitution, our laws, and traditions, we need to pick the best leaders possible. Recent experience certainly illustrates that. Free and accurate elections are essential if we're going to restore our society and safeguard our rights. New York Citizens Audit is a volunteer, nonpartisan group which has been lobbying for open-source audits of the State Board of Elections and reform of the electoral process statewide. Did you know Citizens Audit has uncovered over 1 million felony violations of election law? That in 2020, there were 625,000 more voter registrations than existing voting age citizens in just six New York counties? That there were 338,000 more votes cast than voters who voted? These are just a few shocking examples of the urgent need for reform. You can help. Visit auditny.com and learn the facts, how to volunteer, and make a difference in your community. Again, volunteer, donate, or spread the word. Start at auditny.com. That's auditny.com.
A free solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, your host here today, joined by Tim, the Freedom Variant O'Connor.
I'm here, Kevin. I'm here. And look, I believe we've talked about this on a previous show, but look, the government wants to get its hands into everything. And so one of the things they want to get their hands into right now is they want to, I don't know that it's actually end up banning TikTok, but they want it. They want to force it to change ownership here in the United States. So right. That they can use its awesome spyware to track American citizens.
Hey, you can't use your technology to manipulate the opinions of Americans. We want to do it.
We want to do it, right? Like they'll force the sale of TikTok. They'll buy a controlling share. They'll implant some CIA kind of operative, and then they will be using all of its awesome spyware to collect data on the American citizen. They're just jealous of its effectiveness. That's it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. And so folks like Thomas Massey and Rand Paul have had some good statements on this, and we're going to talk about those in a minute. Yeah. But like the crux of it is basically this is the president and the commerce secretary can say, like, if a foreign adversary owns certain type of like websites or apps, that they can require the sale of those assets owned by a foreign adversary to someone in the United States. I mean, like, it's not quite like nationalizing them, but it can force their sale. And if they don't sell their stake in the company, then they can ban their use in the United States. And the law, like, kind of leaves open enough that interpretation that it is not specifically limited to TikTok, and you can't really write a law specific to a company, but right. they're well, giving themselves the power to. Yeah, I mean, like, I know they do sometimes, but like they can't, I forget there's a term for this, but they can't legally like target a specific company or individual. But in doing so, it means that they're giving themselves the power to regulate all sorts of companies. Thomas Massey called it a Trojan horse.
Yes.
They're going to be able to ban all sorts of websites, apps, whatever, anything operating in the United States, but not even necessarily limited to a foreign adversary. But I've seen pointed out, like, well, there's Saudi investors in X, so, like, does this fall under the purview of like what they're trying to regulate and capture and
yes.
possibly take control of now? Well, yeah. I mean, that's
what they want. Elon Musk has arguably, if you don't want to buy into a fixed game show theory, is a little bit of a thorn in the side of what they think social media should be. X as a brand seems to have crossed the line with them as far as wanting less regulated speech. They're not exactly a free speech platform, but they're better. They're a little bit wilder. And guys, it's way funnier than Facebook. There's way more stuff going on. We've got like 50 viewers on Twitter right now or X, and, you know, I don't know, 20 viewers on Facebook and our other thing. So
yeah,
Twitter is kind of happening. It's pretty popular. So, you know, that's a threat to a system of control.
Yeah. And again, like talking about, like going back to the principled side of this is like, regardless of what a company is doing, who it's owned by, et cetera, like, is it appropriate for a government to step in and try to take control here or to force a sale here, even if they're doing something we don't necessarily like? Because I get it. There are ways in which social media can be unhealthy. And let's throw it out there, Tim, because like the thing that freaked people out is TikTok like put out a push notification asking people to like call their representative because there's a threat to ban TikTok. Actually, let me find the exact. TikTok is at risk of being shut down in the U.S. Call your representative now. Right? They put out a push notification for this, and people freaked out. Like, oh, China can like call people to political action all of a sudden. And again, it's not exactly China. It's ByteDance. That definitely there's some shady stuff going on. But like that, I think freaks people out more than the spyware part of it.
People are incredibly reactive to China. We're at a point where we're funding military build up in Taiwan. I mean, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad idea either, like, but people are very reactive to China. It's a tool of the zeitgeist to manipulate excited reactions. So sure, like, look, China's attacking us with TikTok. Like, that's a pretty good narrative for the government, for people to buy into more government, right? Like, China is attacking your kids with TikTok. Help save our kids from TikTok. I mean, honestly,
someone
I want to send
children.
Yeah, I want to send money to the government. Like, save my kid from TikTok. Like, my kid doesn't really like TikTok. Save my wife from TikTok. She watches all sorts of videos on that thing, man. It drives me nuts, you know? I'm sure they have her credit card. They're going to start buying stuff for her. Like, her social credit score is going to go in the toilet. I mean, it's just, I'm terrified. Protect my wife from TikTok, you know, and plus she watches those anti-cop, you know, the police audit videos. Oh my God. Nobody needs to watch those. Just kidding. If you get a chance, watch the police audit videos. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, yeah. There's a bunch of interesting ones out there. So just to be like to give the most up to date on this, I realized like this did pass the House like by a lot. It was 352-65. Like it was a lot.
Kevin, there's some wildly strange bedfellows on this deal though. That in that 62 people, right? Like AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene, people that like I would argue that both of them in their own way want to be participate in a less authoritarian government. Even though they both fail miserably when it comes down to the final solutions of a less authoritarian government. So I don't know. I would like to see in your face when I said that. But anyway.
interesting choice there.
Yeah. But it's very interesting, Bethel. And then, of course, we have Thomas Massie, our probably, I would say, arguably the most libertarian congressional representative going. And again, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, AOC. I don't know how Matt Gaetz voted, but I would suspect he probably voted against it based on him being somewhat anti-authoritarian. And look, guys, the U.S. government has all sorts of power to spy on you without TikTok. I don't know that we should worry about it. They don't need TikTok, too. Also.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're not asking for more spying, Tim. They're just saying they don't want the Chinese Communist Party to spy on us. That's all they're doing. It's nothing nefarious, Tim. Just they're saving us from China. That's all that's happening here.
So look, if you don't want a Chinese spy app on your phone, don't download TikTok.
It's fine.
Yeah, don't download it. Just say no. Just know that, look, literally the concerns are real. Like, in a sense, it is a spy app. It records keystrokes. It records all sorts of information about your behavior.
Like what you're interested in and patterns. Like, I don't even think that it's weird because, like, I see politicians talk about the spying thing. I think the thing that freaks a lot of intellectuals out, like, again, people who are, like, in my mind, like, liberal and reasonable folks, like, on the left and the right, and they're like, oh, China could, like, manipulate the algorithms to, like, make it so that we can't talk about Taiwan? And what if they decide to invade the island and all you get served are like anti-Taiwan messaging? And like, what if that happens? Like, I don't know. Like, people don't just rely on TikTok though. They go to other places. They go to Twitter. They just search stuff in Google. They, you know, they go to Facebook. Like, yeah. If you are solely relying on TikTok for your news, like, get help. Like, do better.
I think it's bad. But I do think that there is like, you're going to find content on TikTok that you're not going to find on YouTube. You're going to find takes on TikTok that are not available in the mainstream media. That makes sense. I'm not saying that they're right necessarily, but also, like, you know, as the conspiracy theorist that I am, there was parts of TikTok that I enjoyed when I was regularly doing it. I did kind of give up on it because, like, you know, they should pay me for my data more. And they banned me unfairly for doing a live when I just was having conversations with people.
Wow.
But I mean, they lifted the ban, but it's kind of had a mass reporting feature. So if like two or three people reported you, you got an automatic ban and you could try to fight it. And then you would not be able to do a live for a month. And it was just really annoying. So I don't know if they've lifted those prescriptions, but
there's a bunch of strange policies that they enact on the platform. They ban people randomly, and it, like, a lot of it I think is like bot driven, like, as in like, is it all automated, and they have some issues with that. But like, and again, I don't expect or need a platform to be perfect. Like, again, the fundamental like principle for me here is like, if you're worried about Chinese propaganda, right, if you're worried about people manipulating you know, the opinions of Americans, I think you need like that type of like thought process comes from a fundamental distrust of liberty. That thought process comes from like, people are too stupid. Like, you rubes out there are too dumb to be able to discern what the truth is. Like, it goes back to the fake news thing, but this one's bipartisan because like China's involved. Like, but it goes back to like the same thing Facebook was doing, the same thing Twitter was doing. You people are too stupid to understand what the truth is, so we're going to suppress the fake news for you. Tim, agree or disagree? Yeah.
No, like you're on point there. It goes to the emotional infants that we've made of Americans, right? Like, we can control them by making them upset. And this is a red team criticism, right? That China is a major danger to your freedoms. Now, China wants to make stuff and sell it to us. That's what they want to do. Now, do they have a military might? Are we going to have a problem in Taiwan? Yeah, those things are real. But like, also, there's a certain amount of paranoia that gets forced on everyone when they participate in the mainstream political narratives. And that's how I feel about China. I think that there's a much more reasonable, rational approach. You know, I don't like when they buy opinions from celebrities, which I feel as though China has paid for some favorable press from celebrities, but also they want to sell us stuff. That's how that goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they do want to do that.
And advertising, bro.
I mean, yeah, it's that's kind of a lot of what it is, right? They want to participate in the global economy in some ways. I mean, the government is nefarious, and like I don't want to dismiss that, because I think that the government of China is awful, like legitimately fair. One of the worst in the world. They are bad, but there's a lot of like companies who are just trying to make money and do fun stuff, right? Like, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to participate in capitalism like the rest of them. And if their government would stop being so gosh darn awful, we could go to like cooperating with, you know, our Chinese friends across the ocean there. Like, we could, and around the world. Like, it's like the government is what makes that relationship terrible, and this is a fight between two governments that is interfering with like peace, prosperity, cooperation, and entertainment between like two people who would have a lot more mutual interest if for the fact that psychopaths are running their states.
I'm so proud of you right now. That was beautiful.
There you go.
Yeah,
thought you'd appreciate that.
Yeah. Just so you know, I was going to throw a curveball at you. I think we're running out of time.
You got like a minute and a half left.
Yeah. Hey, Trump won the Super Bowl, dude. 9-0, man. It was epic. Like, it, Lawfare lost. How do you feel about those statements?
We don't have time to fully get into them. Yeah, but like I you're talking about like the ballot thing.
Yeah, but I want the WYSL audience to know that the Freedom Variant is happy that Trump won a big, huge Supreme Court victory. Kevin and I will hash it out after the show.
We're going to talk about it. And you know, I agree with you. I think the court was right on this one, and I think we talked about it in the show. Like they, yeah. All right, but we'll have to talk about that after the show. Thank you, WYSL audience, for joining us. Have a great night, folks. Take care.